straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 110, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with my boy the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Jam-packed podcast today, man. Duck, this is one of those special days, special games, special guests.
Yeah, it is a special week, but I don't know, Ced, tell me this. I don't feel the buzz that you would think Texas Southern Cal would generate. I know last year, it just seemed, boy, everybody was just on pins and needles. I know it was only two games into Tom Herman's career, and it was a road trip to L.A. We were all excited about that.
And it was the first time they'd played each other since the epic championship game of 05.
Exactly. So I don't know. Tell me how you feel. Do you feel it in the air?
Like, yes, let me tell you.
You do?
Yeah, first of all, we've got Texas Longhorn legend Michael Griffin coming up a little later, along with Dallas Cowboys insider Jacques Taylor from Dallas. I'm going to tell you, I don't feel the buzz that I felt this time last year, because you got to remember, Duck, this time last year, brand new coach, trying to turn this thing around.
Right.
With a big rematch against a pioneer program in college football, and they're still smarting from that 51 burger Maryland put on them. So there was a lot to talk about this time last year. Now USC's not as good this year.
Right.
Texas doesn't seem as good as it could be after not getting it done in the second half against Tulsa. So it kind of brings about a malaise that's over the city. I think Austin will be more excited about this in a couple of days when they kick off. But right now, it's not as big as I think it could have been if both teams had entered the game 2-0.
No, I think you're right. Come kickoff on Saturday night, everybody be jacked up and energized. But like you said, it was the first time they'd played, in what was it, about 11, 12 years. And it was in L.A. at the Coliseum. This year, they're coming off a scuffled win over Tulsa, where at least last year they'd blown out San Jose State and looked like they'd found their stride a little bit. So, and like you said, USC, it's not a vintage USC team. It might be in terms of talent, but not experience. And they're coming off a bad loss to Stanford, where they only scored a field goal.
So, and you know what? This team has All-American candidates, but they're not all at the skill positions like Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and Lindell White and Dwayne Jarrett, Steve Smith, guys like that. It's not like that. The quarterback is JT Daniels. He's a freshman. And this is his first big road game of his career. And wait, were they at Stanford last week, Doug?
They were.
So this is his second big road game of his career. So so it's going to be a surreal experience for him as well. Here's what I'm going to ask you, Sam Ellinger. I wrote about it in today's paper. Mm-hmm. Is Sam Ellinger, has he learned his lessons from last year? And from the end of the Maryland game, where he coughed up another couple of picks that they basically helped get them beat, has he learned those lessons? And will he be able to play clean like he did against Tulsa? He played really well.
I don't know if he'll play totally clean, because it's pretty good defense. And, it's a veteran secondary, even though they've had some safety injuries and they're a little thin in the secondary. But they got two great linebackers and Porter Gustin and Cameron Smith, both probably All-American candidates. So I think it's going to be a real salty defense. They held Stanford to 17, and they were in that game, even though the offense didn't do too much. I like what you said. It could come down to Sam versus JT Daniels, 18-year-old freshman at USC, making just his third start in his college career. This is a guy who skipped his high school senior season, and he was he was Trojan throughout.
Oh, yeah, he knew where he was going.
He was the Gatorade National Offensive Player of the Year. So a lot of hullabaloo, and comes in with a lot of billing. And I think probably we'll see USC run the ball a lot more than they did against Stanford, try to take some of the pressure off Daniels. Because if you keep a clean pocket, he's a heck of a thrower. He got a big arm, and I think that'll be. I think that could be the big key is that at the run, how much success each team has on the in the running game, and then how much pressure they have to put on each quarterback.
And it was interesting to hear Charles Omenihu this week talk about we need to hit that freshman. We need to hit him over and over again, and we need to rattle him.
Right.
And we need to let him feel us. And I love the fact that this defense isn't hiding away, hiding from what needs to be done to get this win. You're usually only as good as your quarterback. And if they can make this freshman be a freshman, and Michael Griffin will talk about that a little later in our guest segment. If you can make that freshman feel his inexperience and make him one-dimensional, you got a chance to really shut down USC. I don't know if they're going to hold him to 3 points. I highly doubt it. But I really think that they can create some field position if they play well in special teams, which is a big if, Duck.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big if. Michael Dixon doesn't live here anymore.
No, he doesn't.
They'll be able to, I think, do enough to get this win.
Well, like you said, they don't have Michael Dixon to, you know, win the field position battle every series where if they go three and out, he kicks it 60 yards or 55 yards. They haven't had the success there. And like you said, Omenihu, that's the right game plan. You want to bring pressure. You want to rattle their freshman quarterback who's only been in two college games. But here's the bad news. The bad news, they've had one sack after two games, and then that came from their cornerback, Chris Boyd. So they've got to put more pressure on JT Daniels. If not from the defensive line, you're going to have to blitz more, maybe take some chances, because I think if he just sits back in a clean pocket, he'll pick them apart. So you're right about pressure. It's huge in this game.
Well, you know what? Without further ado, let's get to one of our guests. Michael Griffin is coming up. Here's the Longhorn legend on Second Thought. Joining us via phone, a Longhorn legend, NFL great Michael Griffin, new member of the 2018 class of the Texas Hall of Honor. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing?
And we're here with the Big Cheese. We're doing great, man. It's good to have you on with us, and congratulations on the Hall of Honor, man.
Oh, thank y'all very much.
So, did you give a great speech last weekend?
They did. They had Lowell. He asked us questions, and we just answered the questions. It was pretty much who you have to thank for your success. What did it mean to you? And last one was, what's your greatest moment playing at the University of Texas?
So, and that was?
everybody thinks about the national championship game. But, if you go back and look into that season, there was a game versus Texas A&M where we were down. It was a dogfight. And for me, my best play that I can remember is just that blocked punt that Cedric Griffin ended up catching and scoring a touchdown, and we got up and we ended up winning that game. So for me, that's my biggest play. People look at the national championship game and look at that interception, but, I mean, none of that would have happened if we would have never won that game. So that's what I look forward to, or that's what I go back, one of the best plays I ever made. I look at just making that blocked punt and being able to for us to be able to score and win that game, and for us to go and win the Big 12 championship, and from there, winning a national championship.
Yeah, then y'all had that real close game with Colorado, remember?
that was another block punt. I almost thought I had a touchdown, and Brandon Foster grabbed the ball. So yeah, it's. A couple of people benefited off some block punts.
All I know is I'm surprised Drew Kelsen didn't go to prison for what he did to Joel Klatt. I'll never forget that, man. Oh, my God.
You know, a lot of people love to go to Houston and stay in Houston. He got an opportunity to stay.
No, ain't that the truth, man? Ain't that the truth? Michael appeared in 50 career games for UT. 8 interceptions, 28 starts, 3 bowl wins. I mean, man,
and what was
we missed
record?
Those days.
What was their record?
44-7.
That's pretty sweet.
During the Griffin years. Mike, how big was it to go into this Hall of Fame class, Hall of Honor, with Derek Dockery and Justin Blaylock, guys you know well, and then Jabrin Cox, another guy that won a championship while you were on campus?
Man, you know, it's crazy because, I never got the award. You know, I played with 2 Thorpe Award winners, Michael Huff and Aaron Ross. You know, you played with, Heisman Trophy candidates, You played with, you know, the top linebacker in the country. I mean, you played with all these guys that are, that, you know, that was awarded all these awards. You know, I was never awarded anything.
Well, you are now.
Mike, I'll tell you why, Mike. You know, Mike, I'll tell you why you never won anything.
Why?
Why is that?
Tell him.
Because you should have been a running back. I saw you at Bowie High School. You were the best running back I covered when I was on this high school beat at the Statesman.
If I was a running back, no Jamal Charles and none of them after that.
So I bet you Jamal Charles sends you thank you notes every day. Then.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest with you, I mean, it was just, you know, you played on a very talented right. football team. And to be inducted to the Hall of Honor, I mean, you can't do nothing but thank all the guys that are around you because they were the ones that allowed that, you know, they were the ones that allowed you to be able to play. They pushed you. They motivated you. You played for each and one another. And, you know, if you're not around a great group of guys that are motivated, that are hungry to win, you know, then, you know, you play up to those types of expectations. And, you know, you got the secondary. I mean, like I told Terrell Brown and Aaron Ross, Michael Huff came. You know, I told them thank you, you know, because, you know, without them playing the type of football that they were playing, you know, going on and playing the National Football League, but in college, having a guy like Terrell Brown, you can trust and know that he can hold his own. Cedric Griffin, Aaron Ross, Michael Huff, even Nathan Vasher before he left, and Dakari Pearson, them guys showing me the way of how to prepare, how to play, how to practice each and every day. You know, you owe it to all your teammates because without them, you know, they show you the way. You know, your high school kid, like Cedric said, come in and played running back, never played a defensive back position, and you know, you have a guy that has God knows how many interceptions, Nathan Vasher, who's right there, and you're just watching how he prepares and how he competes against Roy Williams and Sloan Thomas and B.J. Johnson every day. And then you watch a guy like Dakari Pearson, who before he had the shoulder injury, I believe he had like 5 or 6 interceptions or something like that the year before. And you just watch those guys, and you're like, okay, that's how you play the position. This is what you're supposed to do. This is how you're supposed to cover. This is how you're supposed to prepare. This is how you're supposed to patrol the middle of the field. And then you have a great coach like Coach Aquina, whose resume speaks for itself. I mean, it made it easier for me. It was an easy transition to be able to play the position at the highest level that I was able to play.
Well, you're right. I mean, Dwayne Aquina, maybe the best DB coach ever at the University of Texas. And had just
Man, he's the best DB coach. Best DB coach ever in the college level. I'm going to give him that credit. I mean, he's still putting guys in the lead right now. I mean, he just had Reed's younger brother from the just got drafted by the Houston Texans. And mm-hmm. I mean, he continues to have guys each and every year. So, and I think his job is a lot harder now being at Stanford because you got to recruit guys that can qualify to get into that
school. Oh yeah,
and that's the truth.
But he's still able to put guys in the league. So that's the one thing that, like I said, his resume speaks volumes.
Well, you're right, and boy, Michael mentioning those names, that roll call. I mean, player after player after player, not good players, great players.
And people slept on Dakari Pearson. That was a dog. He was a dog.
And Michael Huff comes in as a skinny track guy. He didn't like to hit. Didn't like to hit. Mm-hmm. And look at becomes a Thorpe Award winner. I mean, you got to give it up for Dwayne Aquina. I mean, that's.
I mean,
some serious.
I mean, you look at a guy like even Aaron Ross's story. You got a guy that literally, you know, didn't make the qualifications.
That's right.
You know, to come in with those guys, and then he leaves. You know, he basically sits out for 2 years.
That's
don't play
right.
football for 2 years, and then still come in, start as a freshman, and then win the Thorpe Award, which. I was up for the Thorpe Award, but he ended up winning it over me. So, I mean, that just tells the type of guys that you have on your team. Like, again, you know, you have nothing but the utmost respect for these guys, and you cheer them on. I mean, one person succeed, we all succeed. So that's the one thing that, you know, it was some fun times and some great times at the University of Texas and, just, you know, great memories.
Well, I know y'all fed off each other because y'all were just so talented. When I know you've been on the Longhorn Network and seen this Texas team got a couple of talented freshmen, Caden Stearns, B.J. Foster, Anthony Cook. Tell me what you've seen out of the Longhorn secondary, particularly those young guys right now, Michael.
Well, right now, I mean, I see that the two young safeties, they're playing very well. I mean, my thing was who needed to step up last week was Stern, just because, you know, you didn't have Brandon Jones, and this right. was his second game starting. He was going to be back there with and then P.J. Locke stepped his game up also, but no, the first play of the game to get an interception and put Texas in scoring position. I mean, that was a great play. Managed to get his feet in bounds. Kind of reminded me of myself. batted catch. But then even on a deep ball, I mean, B.J. Foster is able to track the ball, and that's one thing that we know he's good at. You know, he's good at tracking the ball. He's done it in high school and able to translate that from the high school level onto the college level. I mean, that's some positive the way to look, you know, look into the future. They're going to have some great, some good group of guys going forward, let alone Brandon Jones was the number one safety. So, and he had a great game the first game of the season. I mean, I didn't think he returned.
It was wonderful,
So, I mean, for him to have that back bounce back game, I know last year he was battling with a shoulder injury, and then to come in this year versus Maryland, had a great game. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but then you got B.J. Foster's guys stepping it up versus Tulsa, getting turnovers. And Chris Boyd, I mean, he seems like it's quiet, but, I mean, I've been watching him strictly. I put pressure on him that he's a senior and he needs to play much better. And I mean, my marquee matchup for the Longhorn Network was him versus Justin Hobbs, a 6'3", 6'4" receiver, 230 pounds, up for the Blennikoff Award, who just came off a 3-catch, 60-yard game, averaging 20 yards a catch and a touchdown. And, I mean, literally you held this guy for 2 catches and 12 yards. And then the week before, had a sack, should have had an interception. You know what they say about his DBs, his great defense that we can't catch.
That's right.
But
Kyle Fuller.
Again, I mean, he exactly. So, he's been playing real good football. So, you know, and then there's been some other areas where, you know, you see a little bit of weakness here and there, and hopefully those guys start stepping up and they start playing. But, I mean, P.J. Locke, I think he probably did the hit of the lifetime. I've never seen nothing like that. Like somebody shot him out of a cannonball. And literally, I mean, just to see at the end of the game where, you know, Texas kind of slacks off a little bit at the end of the game, to see P.J. Locke come. Should have been a turnover. Somebody just get the ball, please. You know, everybody wants to celebrate. Get the ball. But, I mean, to hit that running back who's a real big, thick running back, I mean, they just show that they're playing with toughness. They're getting better each and every week. Just got to limit the big plays. But outside of that, I mean, they're playing some good football, and hopefully that translates into this weekend.
Michael Griffin, you sound like a coach, and I know you did an internship with the Tennessee Titans. What's up? It's time for you to move into that next phase. I know you own a cupcake factory that's making money, but you sound like a coach. What's your future aspirations in that field?
Well, you know, I'm very interested in it, but I got young kids myself, so at the same time, I kind of got to be there for them. I got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 17-month-old. So my 10-year-old is playing flag football now in this new league called Flex. My 8-year-old daughter, she's playing soccer, but she's playing, it's either a year up or 2 years up, so she's playing with older girls. And you know, I'm just trying to be there for them. They've been my biggest supporters when I played, and now I'm just trying to be there for them. But, I mean, I got aspirations, you know, and I try to help here and there. The internship was, you know, a lot of hours. I personally feel like I probably could have cut the hours down because there was just playing the game and learning how to study and knowing what to look for. And knowing what I know, you stop playing as an athlete and you start playing like, you know, now we're playing each other's minds on what you're thinking and what you're going to do and things of that nature. So, you know, the game is that much easier. Like, I just remember sitting in practice during training camp, and I'm like, hey, they done ran this play 3 times already. Y'all ain't figured this out yet. And they're looking at me. They're like, what are you looking at? I'm like, y'all don't remember. And it's just that's what you do when you're playing a game of football and you played it for so long. And even when I go to high school games, even when I go to college games, I think I pretty much figured out every formation that Herman's doing that I can kind of tell you what they're going to do. Like, I've seen it so much.
Right.
So, it's crazy. I mean, and people tell me all the time, like, how do you remember? I'm like, I don't know. It's just I saw it. I see it so much.
Instinctive.
And I've seen it so much over the course of my lifetime that it's like it's just there. And so I would love, because, I mean, again, the game of football, you look at, like, oh, these are great athletes, but the best players are the ones that takes all the athleticism out of it and then turns it into, you know, a thinking game where you just know.
Mm-hmm.
And you study so much that you just know, and then it becomes instinctive. And that's the one thing that, and I'm going to attest to this, people thought I was just being biased, but I broke down some film of middle of the field safety play when I was in Carolina. And even for myself, I watched myself over the years, and I was able to take myself and my personal feelings out of the game and able to watch the game and realize, okay, you are slowing down, but the only thing that's helping you out is knowing the game.
Wow.
But, you know, when you're able to sit back and really watch, say, okay, I see when they say, oh, you know, this guy is losing a step, you know. But it seems like he's playing faster when you're watching a real game. But when you actually sit there and you know yourself and you watch yourself from 2008 and you watch yourself in 2015 and 2016, you see a big difference on the speed of how I'm moving and my reaction and things. But the things that allow you to put you in play, into the plays, is knowing the game. So I think the quicker the younger guys understand that, the faster they will play. You know, they're already playing fast. And that's the thing that they said I'm biased is Earl Thomas is legit the best in the game.
He is, no question.
I was watching and I saw what he saw and I see why he played it. But then to watch his reaction on how he played it just puts him that much more elite and that much more better than the everyday guy that you see that plays that position.
He's still cat quick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's you really sit down and watch and being on the other side of the ball and really other side of the game, not being a player but being a coach and watching, you know, I know there's things that I can do to help people out and go from there. But, again, it's one of those situations where you got to try to have an equal balance because, I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes of coaches that have families but really not there because, you know, they're so involved with playing and their coaching or whatever it may be. And that's the one thing that I know, that I had a mother and a father that was both there for me, and I want to be the same father that I had growing up.
Absolutely. And before we let you go, Michael, how do you see this Texas Southern Cal game? Is Texas close to establishing an identity, and USC comes in with a freshman quarterback? How do you assess the game unfolding?
Well, you know, I'm going to be completely honest right now. I don't think it's the same two teams that we saw last year going into this game.
Right.
You know, you have a first-round quarterback who started for the Jets Monday night. Mm-hmm. That was with USC last.
Right.
And then you had some other players that you know, went on and got drafted from the USC team. And the same thing goes for the University of Texas team. But I see what I see is that Texas comes out the way they did versus Tulsa. They could put, and the thing is, the game of football is make a team one-dimensional. And if it's a freshman quarterback, let the freshman quarterback put him in a position where he has to be in control of the game. He has to make all the decisions. And that's the one thing that 18 years old, you know, he doesn't know everything he thinks he knows.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put him in a dogfight, such as, and you're able to let him be, you know, be able to run the ball and let him pass the ball and play action, things of those nature, then you're in for a long game. So it's all about what Texas team you get, and that's the thing. I think we're still at a big question mark, and I think that's what the fans and everybody are at. It's a question mark. You saw a team that started very slow versus Maryland and then jumped right back in the game, but then, you know, you see the woes from last year, and then this year, then the next game, you see a team that from the first start, I mean, the kickoff, I don't know who it was, but I seen somebody on Texas knock somebody out. And then the next play, interception, next play, touchdown, and then three and out, then they touchdown. And you see this team, and then they hit a slump come third quarter. But then they finish. So it's all about what team, let alone this, and let's not forget that Tulsa didn't capitalize on two drop pass for touchdowns, and they missed quite a few field goals. So, and then there probably would have been some more field goal attempts if they, instead of going for it on fourth down, they would have kicked the field goal, but they lost faith in the field goal kicker. So, again, there's no telling what kind of game that really could have been. So, I think right now it's wide open. I think it can go any way because you don't know what Texas team you're going to see, and let alone, you know, Stanford always has a real good team. And they lost versus Stanford, but at the same time, you just don't know what you're going to get. So I think if they jump on USC early, you got the home field advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get a win. I don't think it's going to be an easy win. But if you start slow and turn into a dogfight, I don't know. I don't know what you got. And let alone, we don't know if you get Ingram, who's a very athletic, explosive running back. So we got to see what you get. They can't allow the big plays, which that's what Texas has been getting scored on, is just big plays, big chunk yards. So
yeah. So Mike, my opinion is they're going to put four quarters together. We'll see. Because they haven't done it yet. But man, I look forward. Hopefully, are you going to be at the game, Mike?
freshen up in the Longhorn Network booth. You know where I be at.
I didn't know. Are you full time for the LHN? I didn't know, man.
I'm there all season, so I'll be there at 5 o'clock, 2 hours before.
There you go.
All right. Well, make sure your suit game is tight, because I'm gonna be suited and booted. I'll look for you, man.
You know, Mike. You better ask people about my suit game. My suit game is on point now.
Well, Mike, hey man, we appreciate it. We'll see you at the game, man. Thanks for joining us today, bro.
Hey, thank you as always.
Appreciate it, Mike. Take care.
All right.
Bye bye.
Take care. Have a good rest. Stay dry.
we will. Bye bye.
Michael Griffin's always entertaining. Remember when we did that that thing last year when we got with all the guys that won?
Yeah, the memories.
The memories. And after we turned off recorders, I wish we had kept them on because he was so funny.
He was getting worked up still. He still wanted to play in
he
the NFL.
He still wanted to play at that time. Yeah.
He did.
One of my favorites and a self-made man who still lives in the house he bought 10 years ago.
That's amazing. That's smart.
That's very smart. Man. So let's transition into our next guest.
Okay.
We had the Longhorn legend. Let's talk some NFL with our friend Jock Taylor. Here's Jock Taylor on Second Thought. Joining us via phone, a longtime fixture in the Dallas Cowboys beat community, columnist, currently the host of J-Dub City, and I think that J-Dub is for J-T.
I like it.
J-Dub City, weekdays 9 to 1 on ESPN Radio, 103.3 FM, and also the Cowboys Insider for NBC 5 with our guy, Nui Scruggs. It's Jock Taylor joining us. What's up, bro?
Hey, man, I'm just enjoying week one of season number 24 covering your Dallas Cowboys.
Did you enjoy it that much, seriously? I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of positive came out of that game, was there not, Jock? I mean, let's be real.
Well, you know, when you're talking Cowboys, and, you know, frankly, it's when you're talking NFL, it's the sky is falling. It's a week-to-week deal. Not much unlike Texas football.
Very similar.
So, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
so they didn't play well. And the reality is, this is the reality. The reality is, since 2007, only 10 of 83 teams that started 0-2 have made the playoffs.
Mm.
So we're looking at week two, and we already talked about I don't want to call this a must-win, but y'all better win this game.
Wow.
Must-win.
New York Giants coming in with Saquon Barkley.
Salty.
Salty with a 68-yard run touchdown in his debut. From the outside looking in, and I know you're around this organization all the time, before the season I was like, is Allen Hurn, is that a guy at receiver, and Cole Beasley's going to lead the charge? I don't see playmakers at receiver, and I didn't see your Buckeye get enough touches, Ezekiel Elliott. What were your thoughts on the offense coming out of that first game?
My thoughts were, and I was very adamant about this, which is I don't care if you want to go with this whole receiver by committee deal. That's your choice, and you can do that. But if it don't work, I ain't trying to hear no excuses. And I don't mind the receiver by committee. The problem for the Cowboys is the receivers they got on the committee are not that accomplished. I think when you go with a receiver by committee, you'd like to have some guys who are good or above average. And to me, Allen Hurn and Cole Beasley are slightly above average. And everybody else was Deontay Thompson, Terrence Williams, Tavon Austin, Michael Gallup, the rookie out of Colorado State. They just average at best. So you don't have a lot of guys there who are capable of making plays. And as of Sunday's game in Carolina, man, they were 2-11 on third down, but they averaged 12 yards on third down. They only had 22 plays in the first half, and that's why Zeke didn't touch the ball. So they got to be better on first and second down to make third down manageable. Then they can sustain drives, and Zeke will get the ball, and everybody will be happy.
But Jock, I agree with you 100%. So what's the upside? What can Jason Linehan do when you have receivers of this ilk where you don't have a number one receiver? I mean, what's Dak going to do?
They were out of eight choices. So, you know, I mean, look at Chicago. Chicago got a young quarterback in Mitch Trubisky, second pick of the draft last year.
Right.
They went out, and they spent $42 million on Allen Robinson. They spent $26 million on Taylor Gabriel. They spent a second-round pick on Anthony Miller. Now, even if those guys don't work out, they made the effort and the investment to get you what we hope will be quality people, okay? $26 million, $22 million, second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
The Cowboys added three receivers in offseason. Tavon Austin, who's a hell of a guy, but who can only be described as a first round bust thus far.
Mm-hmm.
They added Deontay Thompson, another hell of a guy, great guy, who can only be described as a journeyman. And they added Michael Gallup, a third round pick from Colorado State, who can only be described as a great guy who has a very nice challenger with a Hemi engine that's bigger than a regular Hemi engine, but it has a lot of potential.
Oh my God! We drove a Dodge Charger with a Hemi engine in D.C. this past week. I know what you mean on that.
Yeah, but it got us there. I don't know where this receiver corps is going to get him. That got us there, Sid. That Dodge Charger. He's just hitting it right on the head, and I'm not so sure Dez Bryant would help them. Witten would, but I mean, what are their options?
He'd have a job right now.
I think so, too. I think Dez would have signed.
He's just too slow.
Should have took that Ravens money. Should have taken it and ran with it.
He can't run anymore, can he?
No, he can't. But here's what I'm going to ask you. The Giants are going to come in, and that's always a barn burner anytime they get together at Jerry World. They go 0-2, let's just say, and for all intents and purposes, that's a toss-up. Are they going to buck history and make the playoffs? Are they going to be like that Emmitt Smith holdout team that went 0-2 and came back and won a Super Bowl, or is it just going to be a bad year?
I mean, I think, I don't mind blaming nobody. But I think it's too early to say, man. I mean, because your mood and view of the team will be completely different if they come out and win 35-14.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, they fixed the offensive problem. Everybody's back on track. All hail Dak. Hey, give him $25 million. Let's go. So we have to see how the game plays out. If you're asking me, I don't see a whole lot of ways for them to have success because, and I've said this 1,000 times since the offseason started, arguing with my co-host Will Chambers about it. You can sit here, man, and talk about Zeke and Zeke this and Zeke that. Zeke is great. Zeke is wonderful. Zeke ain't gonna do a daggone thing. I thought I was gonna cuss. I know you did.
No, that's okay.
They get some big plays in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you get big plays in the passing game, you force the safeties to back up, you force the linebackers to back up a little bit, then Zeke can do his thing like few others. When you don't get big plays in the passing game, man, NFL defenses, for the most part, you're not going to consistently go 10 plays, 80 yards, or 9 plays, 75 yards. Or you're not going to do it. And you tell me, who amongst this group of receivers is going to provide the big plays on a regular basis, because I can't see it with a magnifying glass.
I can't see it either, and that's why it's all about options and playmakers. Jacques is 100% right. Look at the Patriots. You know, they're destitute at wide receiver. Talking about Cordell Patterson, they're bringing Corey Coleman and what's his name, Brett Fowler. I thought he was a center fielder for the Twins. I mean, I don't even know who that is, but they're desperate to bring in receivers. So,
and they have Gronk.
They have Gronk, and they got...
The difference is, number one, they got Gronk, who's an all-world player. And number two, they got a good scheme. They use bunch concepts. They use rub routes. They scheme people open. The Cowboys, whether you like it or not, have always, under the Jason Garrett thing, been what they describe as an execution offense, which is, I'm better than said. I'm going to beat him. You give me the ball. We look for the best matchup. Oh, okay, we think Kirk can take Taylor, so let's go to Kirk on this play. The problem becomes, when all your guys are just average and they can't beat one-on-one coverage, now where do you go with the ball?
And that's what happened with Dez last year and the year before. I mean, he stopped beating guys, couldn't get off the line of scrimmage.
Well, I mean...
No, that's a problem for him. I mean, what happened with Dez was he was always an athletic freak, and he never spent a whole lot of time learning the nuance of the game. And so when he lost just a smidgen of the athleticism, and he became just a normal freak like everybody else in the NBA, he didn't have the skill set to make it happen on a regular basis.
Well, there's just so much pressure put on that defense, you know. And, you know, they hold Carolina to 18, or 16, rather. And you can't count on holding another team to 16. I mean, like you say, Giants come in here. They have some weapons. Saquon Barkley's going to be tough. Beckham, Shepard. I mean, they've got some things they can throw at you. So... And like you said, Jacques, he said, yeah, if they win 35 to whatever, maybe all is all right. I don't see them getting to 35. And I like Michael Gallup. I like Michael Gallup. I just...
Not as a number one, though.
I don't see them ever getting to 35 in a game. Do y'all?
I mean, it's... they're right now, man, their offense has got problems. You know, Dak, if you go... And this all started. It's really amazing, truly. It all started 9 games ago against Atlanta when Adrian Claiborne got 6 sacks against while Tyron Smith was out.
Mm-hmm.
Against Chaz Green, and they lost. I can't remember the score, but they didn't score one touchdown. Okay, in the last 9 games, starting with that one, Cowboys are averaging like 16 points a game. Dak is averaging 188 yards passing with 6 TDs and 9 touchdowns. What's amazing is that in the previous 5 games before that, they were 5-0, averaging 30 points and 380 yards a game.
Wow.
So it's like they went and fell off a cliff offensively, and you know, man, I don't know what happened in that Atlanta game, but I do know this: in Dak's first 24 games, he got sacked 28 times. I'm sorry, he got sacked 35 times in the first 24 games.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 9 games, he's been sacked 28 times.
Ooh.
So there's more pressure and there's less effectiveness from him.
Mm.
And you talked about the offensive line. Travis Frederick is out, and there's depth concerns. Up front, what are you seeing from the Longhorn, Connor Williams?
Man, everybody, you got to have more. Everybody can't be on a pro and offensive line, man. other people operate with less. I'm sorry, Travis Frederick is out. I hope he comes back this year. But Joe Looney is serviceable,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's up to Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan to figure out a way to trick them until their people come back. Then you can do what you want to. But the best coaches know how to trick them until their people get back, and then they do what they do. And if you can't trick them, hey, man, I don't know what to tell you other than you might need to go down to that government building property for some benefits.
But,
when you're unemployed, them unemployment benefits.
Don't talk to a newspaper man about unemployment. I'm kind of paranoid these days, bro. A little paranoid. Come on now.
Why do you think I got 3 jobs?
Well, then it just leads to the obvious question and all the speculation about Jason Garrett's future and, you know, we know he's Jerry's boy and all, but what do you think the likelihood, if this season keeps going, trending the way it is and goes south, this is Jason Garrett's last year as head coach of the Cowboys?
I think he's got to make a deep playoff run to keep his job. Now, obviously, you know, some extenuated circumstances here and there, maybe not.
Right.
But I do know this, Jerry was on his weekly radio show on the flagship station yesterday talking about Dak is a cross between Cam Newton and Jared Goff.
I saw that.
Some of those things Cam Newton can do, and you're going to see him Sunday. Okay, and basically he's talking about running the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
More zone read. When Jerry starts getting involved in stuff like that, that means he's mad. That means he's frustrated. And so he wants to be aggressive. You know, he's telling you what they plan on doing. And so when I look at that, I go, okay, it's week one, and he's already pissed. So it ain't going to get no better unless they win some games.
Yeah. And a lot of it goes back to the draft. I don't know, when they got Van Der Esch, you know, I thought there were some receivers out there they might could go get. I mean, how much fault do you put in their draft last spring, Jacques?
I thought it was fine. I mean, you know, Van Der Esch was a guy who was supposed to come. They didn't know that Jalen Smith was going to have the kind of off-season and training camp that he had.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, the other thing that Van Der Esch did is it gives you some protection for when Sean Lee misses 2 or 3 games. That's normally what happens, that you don't fall off a cliff at linebacker. You know, I didn't mind Connor Williams in the second round because this is a team built around their offensive line.
Sure.
And then they got Gallup in the third. So, you know, and then Gallup was the guy, if you listen to them, he was the last of a group of receivers that they had ranked all about the same. Because I think 5 guys went the second round. They didn't have that much difference between any of them. As long as they got one of them, they were good.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I tell you what, I just don't know where they're going. And, you know, they got their problems in the D-line with David Irving and Gregory and concussion protocol, too, right now.
Yeah, he'll probably be day-to-day. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
David Irving suspended for the first 4 games.
Right.
But the defense is actually pretty good. They played good the other day.
They did.
193 yards, 16 points. And once they got the zone read or the read option figured out in the first quarter, Carolina didn't do a whole lot. Only one explosive play is 20 yards or more. That defense is actually really pretty good.
It is.
And it's the best unit on the team right now.
And that is a glass half full. Mm-hmm. If they can get that on Sunday, they're got to have a chance at the house. He is the host of J-Dub City weekdays, 9 to 1, ESPN Radio, 103.3 FM, and the Cowboys Insider on NBC5 Dallas. Our guy, Jock Taylor, we appreciate you, man. Kirk will be at the game Sunday, and I'll see you a little later on, bro.
All right, gentlemen. Hook 'em.
All right, thanks for joining us. Take care, Jock. See you soon.
Later.
All right, baby. Bye.
That will do it for a jam-packed episode 110 of On Second Thought. Got to thank our guests, Michael Griffin and Jock Taylor, for joining us. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.